Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Dr. Kirsten Wise, Extension Professor and Specialist in Plant Pathology for the University of Kentucky. This week, we will discuss corn diseases as well as get a brief update on the 2022 corn crop. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
Hello.
How's everybody doing today?
Hot.
Dry.
Hot, dry. I'm hot and dry, so
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, hot and dry, that's right.
We did get a little bit of rain across West Kentucky over this past weekend, which was a good thing. It was a timely thing for some crops. Mm-hmm. I still see a lot of corn twisting up in the tops, especially some of that later planted corn. Never really had the amount of moisture that it needed to get proper root development. And even there, it may be in places where there's plenty of water down in the soil, but it just doesn't have the feet to go find it. So,
yeah, it's depending on where you're at, whether you got any rain or not, it was pretty spotty all over the state. Of course, she's either paying a preacher or living better than Jay and I or something.
Both.
But as I came across this morning, I saw some of the best soybeans and really some of the better-looking corn that I've seen anywhere in the state of Kentucky, to be quite honest with you. It's not like that at home. And with this, you know, of course, this is the second week of July when this is being recorded, and it in places, it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. And I'm not real sure what we're going to end up having. But hopefully it's not like 2012, as Vicki and I were talking off the air. I hope it's not like that, but
it
could
be. I do, too. I know that we've had a lot of folks mention 2012 lately, and it's kind of shaping up to look like 2012. And, you know, David, as you'd mentioned, we really do have some pretty soybeans and some corn in the county. Some of the areas have really picked up rains, and some of them have been about a half inch each time, but they've been real timely when they got those. And as you all have been able to see as you made the drive to Dixon this morning, but there are some other parts of the county that has not been as fortunate, and the corn is it's trying to pollinate. And
David and I usually come the same route over here from Madisonville to Dixon. So I know the area that you drove through, we actually drove different routes this morning, but really from about Nebo to Providence is where a lot of that better looking corn
that's exactly right.
I came from Princeton over across 293, and some of those bottoms across through there look a little better just because of their bottoms, but some of that hill ground as you get into Webster County right there on that edge, it's like everywhere else. It could use a drink, but all matters where you at. I got about an inch Saturday out of two different rains, and by Sunday evening, my garden was dusty again. It just didn't take long at all for it to.
Yeah, it's going to take some measurable rains, several probably measurable rains, even to some of this corn to even make a crop, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I've been looking at some corn, and there's some corn, especially in your area, that I'm not even sure it's going to get an ear. Yep, it's looking that rough.
Yep.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we a lot of times depend on when we shouldn't is the hurricane season. And right now there's really no tropical depressions. No, there's enough shear in the atmosphere, as the meteorologists say, that it's kind of blowing all of these tropical storms out before they really get a chance to develop. And nobody wants to see a hurricane in the Gulf Coast. I lived on the Gulf Coast for 4 years in South Mississippi and then Louisiana too. Nobody wants to see a hurricane. But the timeliness of some of those hurricane storms through the years have made our corn crop and our beans. I remember 1 year we had, the year Katrina come through, 2005, we had two hurricanes. One made our corn crop, and Katrina really made our double crop soybeans that year. So
I remember that well.
As devastating as it is, nobody wants to see that. We're not wishing that on anybody.
No.
But the rains that are a subsequent factor that come from those have sure saved our bacon a few times.
Well, and the heat. I mean, this year, you know, we were in historic highs just about in June. You know, when we was pushing 100, or even I think we even hit 100 maybe in June.
Yeah, I was at 4-H camp.
Yes, you were. That's right. You was at 4-H camp that week, and it was pretty warm. It was pretty warm there, wasn't it?
It was a little bit.
Yeah, and so when you take the heat and then you couple that with the dry conditions, it really sets up for a tough growing season to finish this thing out.
One of our county went to camp the week after you did, and one of our agents made that comment, said there's no place hotter than 4-H camp.
Yeah, there is.
I thought, I started naming off all the places that truly was hotter than 4-H camp. The top of a tobacco barn's one of them.
And I'd have rather been at all of those places other than 4-H camp.
Being that you're an ag agent.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, and I'm sure that Kirsten can say that in a cornfield that is
pretty warm,
tasseled, tall, yeah, and absolutely zero airflow.
Yeah.
It's pretty warm in there, isn't it?
Yeah. So we've been spraying a lot of our corn trials this week, and we have a little weather monitor that we put out with us when we're spraying so we can get those spray conditions in the field. And yesterday, the temperature in the field, the air temp was 98, and the heat index was 125.
And
I rarely complain about the heat because I like the heat, but even I was like, this is hot.
Yeah.
This is really hot.
Yeah. Our farmer's market was yesterday, and I said, it's just hot out here.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a special guest with us this week, Dr. Kirsten Wise. She's an extension plant pathology specialist with the UK and extension professor. And we want to welcome you in and thank you for coming and being part of our show this week.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Kirsten's going to talk with us a little bit this week about corn diseases, about some of the things she's seeing going on across our part of the Corn Belt. And then we'll get into just maybe the corn crop synopsis as a whole a little bit later. But welcome to the show. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and how long you've been in Kentucky?
Yes. Well, I'm originally from Iowa. I grew up in Iowa. Lots of corn. and I did my degrees at the University of Georgia and North Dakota State University. So I did these big climate extremes. And then
sure. I saw that when I was looking up your title to make sure I got it right. You're basically from Iowa to Georgia to North Dakota.
So I've experienced my heat, but I've also experienced that extreme cold too. And I'd rather take the heat any day.
I'll trade you. Y'all can have the heat.
Yeah. But after I graduated from NDSU, I started at Purdue University, and I was there for 8 years as the field crops extension specialist before coming to Kentucky in 2017. So we've been here about 5 years now. So,
yeah, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Time has flown.
I know.
Because it doesn't seem like you've been here quite that long.
Yes. I know. Yeah. You know, you get your like notifications on your phone that says like 5 years ago today, here was your picture, you know. And it was us moving to Kentucky last weekend. So
yeah. Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we're awful glad to have you here and your husband as well. So glad y'all can be here and be a part of working with everybody like we do. So talk a little bit about corn diseases. What are some of the things that you've seen so far this year, and maybe with the climate we're having, some of the things that you expect to see?
Yeah, so my phone has been ringing a lot the last few weeks, and although our corn disease pressure is pretty low because the heat, these dry conditions, you know, we don't want to be out there in the cornfield and these fungi, these pathogens, they don't really like this weather so much either. And so it's been pretty quiet as far as actual diseases in these fields. But there's still a lot of concern about whether or not a fungicide application is going to be needed to protect corn from some of these other diseases that we might be seeing, like southern rust, you know, moving up from the southern states. And I've also gotten a lot of questions about tar spot, and that has been a really hot topic.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in some of the states to our north, and it's getting a lot of attention right now. And we did have it in two counties in Kentucky last year.
I knew that we had found some last year. Yeah.
Yeah. So Todd County and Ohio County found at the end of the season, you know, didn't have any impact on yield, you know, found very late, so no issues with it. But it has really sort of raised some concern based on the amount of damage it can do in some of the states to our north. And so those are really like the big questions that I've been getting. And, you know, although we're not seeing a lot of disease problems right now, there's just a lot of concern about what might be coming in the next month or so.
With the planting season, you know, we know we've had a wet spring. You know, it's the year that keeps giving, so to speak. And
one way of putting it.
So, you know, a lot of corn was planted later than what we normally would. So I know you mentioned Southern Rust. So, you know, I've had it in the back of my mind, okay, you know, a lot, most years, if in a normal year, if we can say that, a lot of times our corn is on past that level, that maturity of actually seeing yield loss because of Southern Rust. It comes in, but it doesn't really affect the yield. It's at the end. So, I mean, what are you thinking, or, and I know you've been thinking about this too, with the difference with our later planting, how is that going to possibly affect the thinking pattern about what producers need to be getting ready for from now till, if assuming we get some rains, but
it's a big assumption. It is,
but you know, just talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, so this is something I've been talking about for a couple weeks now, because we usually get our first confirmation of Southern Rust in Kentucky, you know, about the third week of July. On average, it's usually, you know, middle to the end of July. And usually, like you said, you know, we're probably in doe stage or you know, by then in a lot of fields. But this year we will not be in a lot of fields. And so we're going to be a few weeks behind. And it's really important with Southern Rust that we are protecting that crop through that milk stage. It's got sort of a longer window that it can do damage than some of our other foliar diseases. So we have to sort of keep our crop free of Southern Rust until, you know, kind of we're through milk. And if Southern Rust gets up here about that same time, there would be some fields, you know, of high quality corn, of corn with good yield potential would probably need some protection. Now, there's a couple things working in our favor on this. You know, it's not great that we haven't gotten some of these tropical storms, but those tropical storms also move that Southern Rust up into our area. Mm-hmm. And it's Southern Rust, you know, it's in Louisiana, it's confirmed down there, but it's been kind of sitting still because they're dry too. And so it hasn't been moving north as quickly as it usually does. So that does work in our favor too, and sort of hopefully, fingers crossed, the disease movement and progression will be delayed as well.
The lack of storms has kind of helped keep it at bay, because straight up the Mississippi Valley is where a lot of those storms tend to track.
Yeah, and I think a lot of our corn fields, the variability in the corn and planting dates and all of those things probably put us more susceptible to that. But if we're not getting the tropical storms and things like that, maybe that will help us. But
just don't have the disease pressure
right now. So, but we could be set up for, if it was to have a tropical storm, it could really affect us this year, probably more so than it has ever. You know,
that's
really
right.
Possibly. You know, if all things go, you know.
My biggest concern about the corn crop right now, for where we are, is a lot of it is trying to pollinate in 99 degree temperature.
Yep.
It's and I've read some of the research on this. It seems to be one of the biggest variables to yield that we have is that temperature at pollination time. We've seen that pollination take place early in June at 83, 84 degrees. This year it's almost a month later when most of that's taking place. So I hope we have some corn to have disease problems with in another month or so.
May be like a lot of the fields you're talking about that you've looked at already, that some of that corn may not even make a ear, you know.
Right. And we've seen that variability even within a field. You know, there'll be pockets of the field that look pretty good and is on some better ground with some water holding capacity and it looks really good. And then there are areas of the field that are really suffering. And so it complicates that decision process on whether or not to apply a fungicide, because you're really trying to make that decision on how much of that high yield potential corn is there to protect.
And we're seeing a lot more fungicides applied at earlier, like in your V9, V10, or in some cases, maybe a little bit earlier. So, you know, are you getting calls, or have you gotten calls about that? Is it something that you're seeing as well? And
yes, this is a big area, and an area that we're doing a lot of research in at the University of Kentucky. And so I would say, you know, we have about a decade of research on those early applications, kind of those knee-high fungicide applications that show, you know, it's kind of hit or miss. You know, a fungicide application at that time is not a guaranteed yield increase. Now, the V10 through sort of V14 applications, that's really taken off in the last 5 years. I mean, I remember I started some of this research at Purdue before I came down here. And when I got to Kentucky, I had, you know, maybe a few farmers or producers or outfits that were interested in doing high clearance ground applications. And now it's a lot. I get a lot of calls about, you know, that sort of pre-tassel application in corn. And our research has shown it's a good timing. You know, we can, for especially for diseases like gray leaf spot, which is an annual concern, right? It does a good job, almost as good as a tasseling application. And if that's when you can get across your corn, that's okay. And so what we have been doing some research on is that application timing enough for a southern rust application? Will that carry you all the way through that milk stage? We do have some research from last year that shows, you know, with a couple of the products that are rated as very good against southern rust, a V14 application will get you through that milk stage, and it still looked better than the non-treated control. But we only have 1 year data, so I always put that as the caveat that, you know, we're doing it again this year, and we'll continue to look at that to know if that's going to be a viable option for southern rust control.
Well, I think that, you know, if that is something that, that is looking positive, it sounds like it might be, it's just going to fit well with a lot of our farming operations because unlike several years ago, you know, if you did do your own spraying, it was like a pull-type sprayer, something like that several years ago. But now, you know, there's a lot of farming operations that have the their spray rigs are exactly like the ones that the commercial applicators have. And so it's helps them to be able to make those applications themselves rather than having to hire that done or, you know, with a helicopter or hiring, you know, a commercial, you know, to do that. And it kind of spreads that spreads that cost out a little more for them over more acres too.
And I think, you know, this year, especially this year with the way the corn looks, you really need to put a pencil to this deal and see, you know, check your crop insurance, check, you know, all of those things you need to look at. But, you know, a lot of the ground that I've been seeing lately, especially down in further western Kentucky, is a lot of ground that used to be in cattle farms, that used to be pasture. And so you've got a lot of rolling ground, and boy, those red hills look tough.
They show out, don't they?
Yeah, and I think those are probably some places that are probably not going to make any corn, and then you've got some bottoms that probably will. So the question becomes, do you try to spray those bottoms that and get the most out of it you can? I mean, what do you, you know, so that's the reason you need to call your crop insurance and all that kind of stuff. But those places are tough right now.
Weekend before last, we were out. We'd been somewhere out to eat as a family, my son and wife and I, and was going through some of those rolling areas like you're talking about. And my son was asking, he said, why is the corn different colors, different places in the field? I said, those are the red spots. Because it had that bluish, grayish type cast to it, and you could just tell it was twisted up when you could see those places where it was green as it rolled off the hill and maybe into a low spot. So
big areas, too, not just – little areas.
They're showing out for sure.
For sure. Yep. And if it's not that good crop land that Vicky has and up here, you know, with it's getting all the rain, you know, it's going to make, you know, on the good years, it'll make a good crop. But now these years that in 2012 was an example of that, they're not going to do too good. So you need to really check and see and put the pencil to it and see if this is really what you really need to do.
Well, here in Webster County, though, we along the Green River and along the Tradewater River, we have black dirt is what they call it here, that nice Karnak. And that's a treat to try to work with because it can change overnight and it can be really muddy and it goes to concrete. And then when it really gets dry, it starts to splitting, you know, and then it's really hard to do anything with. And so that's the difficult parts. You know, we've got some of that too. And, you know, it's like you said, David, it's really because, and we say this every year, and I know that Kirsten, you say this, you know, probably multiple times in winter meetings every year, but increase in yield does not always translate to increasing your profit or bottom line. And I think that is one thing that we as extension folks you know, we understand it and we try to explain it, but it does not always, you know, that's not always how everybody looks at that. It's well, if I've gained 2 bushels, then it's worth it. Well, is it? Because
did that 2 bushels cost you?
What did it cost you? Yeah. And at the end of the year, did it make you any money?
Right. I mean, we talk a lot about return on investment, right? So that's what we're aiming to get, is a positive return on investment. And we talk about doing the math, especially for the crop insurance, because fungicide application costs are up this year. You know, fungicide prices are up. The applicator cost is up this year. If you can get an applicator, it's up.
Right.
And so that really cuts into the profit. And I've also talked a lot about, you know, we have these fields that are uneven with some good looking corn and some that's pretty stressed, but a fungicide application will not bring yield potential back. And I think that's a really key point, is that in those areas that you've already lost the yield potential, that fungicide isn't going to increase that yield. It's really just going to protect the crop from disease at this point. Yep. And that should be a factor when making that decision.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Absolutely. And sometimes it just makes it more difficult at harvest time because it stays green longer.
That's true. I mean,
that's, you know, every year we've had some of those conversations too, is I can't get these to dry down. They're just staying green and green stemmed and, you know.
Yes, and we've seen that with particular hybrids, that you can have your corn will be, you know, 1 to 2 points wetter, you know, with a fungicide application. And the later that application is, the more likely that is too.
Kirsten, talk a little bit about, you know, we've talked about availability. What are you hearing from a fungicide standpoint about the availability or the non-availability of a product?
Yeah, so it's sort of hit or miss, you know, where you are and who your retailer is. But we've heard that some of the more popular or newer products, you know, are really hard to find. And one of those, actually, it goes back to tar spot. There's a product from BASF Eltima, and it's very good against tar spot. And so a lot of that product is going up into those northern states. They really want to get it to use for tar spot. And so that makes it a little more scarce around here. And if it is here, it might be a little bit more expensive. Mm-hmm. But just in general, the number that I've heard is that fungicide costs are about 30% higher, and availability is really limited to what your retailer put in and when he put his order in and how much he put in, maybe even back to October. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we've talked a lot about on this program about making a plan back in the winter about what you're going to do and try to get some of these inputs that you're thinking you're going to use, you know, and this is the time that plan has, it's either going to make it or break it, you know.
Right.
And, you know, so hopefully folks did make those plans. If you didn't, and you're like Jay and I, it may not matter because you don't have enough rain to worry about it. But, you know, hopefully those folks that do have that yield potential and are getting some rain can hopefully get that product to help them.
Right. And we do have, there's a lot of products, particularly for southern rust, that are very good. And so if you can't get your top choice, you know, we encourage you all to, you know, talk to you all, talk to your extension agents. You all have our fungicide efficacy guides. And so if that top choice is not available, check out that resource, and it lists all of the commercially available products and how they rate against southern rust or any of the other diseases. And so there's a lot of different products that will do a good job against diseases. And so see if you can get a second choice or a third choice.
That's probably a good place to plug that fungicide efficacy guide, because that's something, as long as some of us have been around, we've not always had that. Of course, you know, the advent of fungicides in general is fairly new compared to, you know, some of us in this room.
That's right. That's right.
But when you think about the fact that we have these new chemistries, they're coming on fairly quickly, and a lot of the research is fairly new. You mentioned this one project a year old. You know, you've got a year's worth of data. It's really, really helpful, because that is a combined, you know, guide, you could say, from other places. They've put this information together. So even though we only have a few years worth of data on some of these products, we've got multiple sources of a few years worth of data.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's all university extension data that goes into those ratings, and it's across a broad geography. And, you know, as extension, you know, plant pathologists, we sort of argue every year about how these products worked against the, in, against different diseases in different areas. And then we kind of compile it all. And so if that rating goes in there, it is going in there with a lot of confidence from the extension specialists across the U.S. that you should see this level of performance from this product.
Yep. And I'll, you know, go ahead and plug too, that you were saying, you know, with extension pathologist specialist, and that that information has, it is non-biased research-based information. And so, you know, when you, when you're looking for information, you know, that's a key point that you really need to look at is when you're looking for information and trying to decide on making a decision about something, you know, always look for that research-based extension land grant publications, because if it's in print and it is out there for you to grab, then you can be confident in what on the information that's in that publication.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, that's, to me, that's what extension is all about, and the fact that we provide that non, you know, that non-biased research information is very important, and a lot of folks look for that. And I understand that folks really depend on their crop service to get their, you know, inputs, and they kind of have to, and they're all peddling their product or whatever you want to call it. But you know, the good thing about extension is you can come to us and we can give you that. It's research-based information. It's not a trial that that particular crop service is doing or that company is doing. It is, you know, and in a lot of time it puts together a lot of different, from a lot of different land-grant universities, that information that, that, you know, because is really helpful to folks, you know, That's right. Try to make that decision about what they're going to do.
And there's a lot of crop consultants, too, that are out there that they rely on these publications. So, you know, some of their, a lot of their recommendations are going to be based on extension publications mm-hmm. across the board. You know, they carry those yep. around too as a resource. So,
yeah. You know, I'll plug this in, David. I think you're exactly right. Folks will go to their dealers. That's who they work with. And that's who they should work with when it comes time to buy products. I've always thought extension was a good place for a producer to come to when they wanted to change, when they wanted to do something different, because we can help supply that information that will help them evaluate whether that change is something they want to jump into or not. Mm-hmm. So yep. good points.
Right. Yeah. It's another source of information. Yep. And I look at it with these types of outputs is we're just trying to help farmers make an informed choice.
Yep. Yep.
That's right. That's Absolutely. A good way to put it.
Yep. Kirsten, talk to us a little bit about tar spot. Kind of give us some little information about it. Cause I mean, it could be something on the horizon for us, as you know, the folks north of us are dealing with it now, and you know how things are. They kind of progress down here. We're either getting it from the south or we're getting it from the north. we're kind of in the middle, in the ugly middle. But, you know, talk to us a little bit about maybe what the symptoms are and go through some of that information with us.
Yes, and like I said, this is such a hot topic right now. I think, you know, if there's one topic that I've gotten the most calls on, you know, besides fungicide applications, it'd be tar spot over the last few weeks. And so tar spot, it's a newer disease to the United States. And I was actually in Indiana when it was found for the first time in the U.S. And I remember we got this sample in and we were like, what is this? You know, we'd never seen it before. And it's sort of a disease that causes these black raised fungal structures on the leaf. And if you kind of run your finger over them, it will feel bumpy. And so that's a difference from things like gray leaf spot or northern, where that lesion is in the leaf. With tar spot, it's actually going to be a raised structure on the leaf. And it will feel kind of bumpy on one surface. And when we think about it, that's usually the sign that everybody sort of thinks of as tar spot. It can look a lot like other things. For instance, insect frass, which we have lots of in our cornfields, can resemble early tar spot. And that's really what I've gotten from Kentucky over the last couple of weeks, lots and lots of pictures of insect frass. You might think I'm an entomologist if you looked at my phone, because I have so many pictures of insect frass. Right. But it's a really easy way to kind of tell them apart. And the trick is, with insect frass, you should be able to wipe it off the leaf. You might have to take your fingernail and kind of scratch at it, or lick your thumb and kind of rub on it, and it should disappear if it's insect frass. Now, if it doesn't and it feels bumpy, you know, that's a sign that you might have tar spot and you need to get that leaf into your extension agent. And then that sort of triggers that process. You know, you all would let me know and we'd get it off to Lexington to the diagnostic lab, because to confirm it, we need to look at it under a microscope, because we're actually going to look for those fungal structures. So it's not something we can confirm in the field with the leaf. We have to actually look at it under the microscope. So that would be the thing that we're starting to see now, is a lot of that insect frass, it can look like tar spot, but we want people out there looking, because they are starting to find it this year up in the states to the north. I think it's been confirmed in Iowa and Wisconsin. So it is starting to get those conditions up there that favor it. So, and Georgia, I should say, just confirmed it this week too.
Now, is that something that you know, a preventative fungicide application can prevent? Or is that something like if you find it, you know, when you rub your finger across there and you find it, is that something you can go ahead and spray for then? Or, I mean, what's the best route to kind of handle it?
Right. So it's going to be like a lot of our diseases, right? So, you know, gray leaf spot can be out there at some levels. And again, we think about that, you know, we talk about our disease triangle. You have to have all three corners of that for disease to be a problem. So we might have tar spot out there, but we might not have the environment that favors it to really take off. So just finding it does not automatically trigger those fungicide applications, right? Just like any other disease that we would be thinking about. I think, you know, we're still learning about how it's going to develop and what type of role it's going to play in Kentucky. If you think about all the really intense things you hear about tar spot, with those double digit yield losses and all of the damage it can do, there's really a very concentrated area, you know, by the Great Lakes where that occurs. And so if you're in northern Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, northern Illinois, that's where that most frequent damage occurs. As you get down into sort of southern Indiana, southern Illinois, you can find it, maybe some yield loss in a couple years, but not as severe as it is in those areas. And so we're even farther south than that. And so it's sort of in a wait and see period to kind of find out how our hot and dry environment is going to impact disease development.
And it's, I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking, because a lot of times, you know, diseases just do not do well in hot, dry conditions. They want that, you know, of course we know that humid, wet conditions, but hot and dry is usually not ones that they really
you
thrive.
Know, we all know that later planted corn is way more susceptible to than early planted corn.
Absolutely.
We just didn't have a lot of early planted corn. We had a little bit, but we didn't have a lot of early planted corn. So, you know, when you're looking and thinking about scouting and doing those type things, you know, those are probably the fields you probably want to concentrate on first to see, because they're going to be way more susceptible than the early planted corn.
Yeah, they will be at a younger growth stage. So if disease does sort of progress in those fields, it could cause more damage.
Yep.
I will say with tar spot, you know, I think we're in kind of a good spot in Kentucky that if it does become a disease of concern that we need to manage, you know, all of my colleagues to the north, they recommend a fungicide application between tasseling and blister. And we're normally applying fungicides for southern rust control during that time. And so, you know, it's possible that we could be managing both diseases with one fungicide application.
Oh, that was going to be my question. Is there a fungicide that controls both?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's a positive.
That'd be handy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can get it, right.
And so for me, I think, you know, it's one of those diseases. I think, you know, our Kentucky farmers, they're used to managing foliar diseases of corn. You know, I think we have a good handle on that and what the proper way to do that is. And so for me, I think, you know, farmers, tar spot's going to be another disease that we have to sort of pay attention to and learn about, and we're going to be able to manage it.
Well, and I mean, it's not necessarily a positive, I guess, but also, you know, our producers are pretty much spraying fungicides every year. It's figured in their budget, like we talked with Dr. Bradley last week. It's in their budget, you know, when they're working on their information for the coming year before they ever plant is that fungicide application. And so they are set up and ready to do that already.
Make a plan this last year, like we talked about all winter long, if you didn't make a plan, this may have been a good learning opportunity for you for next year to think about making a plan and kind of getting all your ducks lined up for whether it be a fungicide application or something else. You know, try to line all that up this next winter for next year, because you never know. Mother Nature can throw us some awful curveballs, and she's putting one on us right now.
She's kind of done that all season.
Yeah, she really has.
That's probably a place for a segue there. One of the things we mentioned earlier that we were going to talk about, and we've talked about it all through the program, is just the general conditions for our corn crop this year. So we've talked about the fact that we're in a dry spot like a good portion of the country is. We're experiencing, you know, nearly record temperatures throughout the end of June and this first part of July. So what do you feel like our synopsis is for the corn crop from here on out? What do you think we're really looking at?
Yeah, this is such a good question. And I think about 2012, and I remember when we were talking about how things could turn around with just one rain. And I feel like we're sort of in that same situation right now, that a timely, measurable rain in a lot of areas could really, you know, take the sting out of this year. And if I could predict that, I mean, I would probably be making some money.
You could probably almost retire.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's hard to predict. But if there's some rain, I think, you know, there's some really good looking spots, and there's some spots that maybe just need a little bit of rain. And so things could turn around really quick if we can get a rain.
I'm really interested myself in seeing the ear development coming on in the next few weeks. I want to get out and peel some ears back and start counting some rows. That's going to be the telltale sign of what we're looking at. I'm almost afraid that these high temperatures at the time when most of this corn's pollinating, I hope rain does make a difference. I think it will add to whatever currently we're going to have. I don't know that it will make things happen that we're not going to have. And the temperature, I'm almost afraid, has had more to do with that this year than anything else, just because of the hot temps coupled with the late planting corn.
And the nighttime temperatures, too.
Cools off.
It never cools off. So, I mean, even in years where it's hot during the day, but our nighttime temperatures drop down. And, I think that kind of helps pollination, because our morning time, when a lot of that pollination happens, you know, is in the earlier morning, you know, we're starting off cooler. But here, right now, our nighttime temperatures are still really high. And that's concerning too.
I'm afraid a lot of it is like Kirsten said. It's going to be a non-issue. I mean, a lot of this corn on these red hills is going to be a non-issue. I just don't think they're going to even have a year. So that's the concern that I have.
Well, in 2012, that was the case. I know I was listening to the weather at my dad's house. It was either this morning or yesterday morning. And they was talking about the temperature, but of yesterday, it was this morning, because they was talking about yesterday's high, and they was, you know how they always do the historic high and low, and 2012 came up as, you know, that we was almost, that's still the record at 104 for yesterday, but we were, you know, pushing close to that. And so the 2012 just keeps popping up, not only in the agriculture world, but, you know, in the weather world.
Even prior to 2012, I can think of a few dry years in there. 2005 was a fairly dry year.
Yeah, it was. Yep.
But we had some hurricanes, you know, that were hit the coast, some really devastating hurricanes that provided us with some subsequent rainfall that really made a big, big difference.
Yep.
I think back to... I've been in this for 27 years now. 2001 was a really dry year. 1999 was a really dry year. But both of those, in 99, we had some hurricanes. Mm-hmm. We had some tropical storms that made the difference. In 2001, we didn't. It was the last really bad year that I remember prior to 2012. So.
Yep.
Yeah, that was my first year in Extension. I had just came out of the ag retail world as a crop consultant and came to Extension in 2001, and I remember it being dry.
It was pretty dry.
Yeah.
So, and I remember a few before then, too, 87, 83. We could go on back.
You're going to tell your age now, Jay. You're going to start telling your age.
I remember some pretty dry years through that time.
But talking about 2012, Kirsten, just, you know, what about, give some comparisons about fungicide applications in 2012 and, you know, kind of as we're talking about the similarities and where to go from here. What did you see in 2012 and better yet, what did we learn from 2012?
Yes. So I've been the last few weeks been pulling through all my 2012 fungicide application data, and very similar types of conditions. We were spraying corn when it was miserably hot. You know, some of it was even sort of pineapple in already, and we're still putting the fungicide on. And some of it was, we knew we didn't have a lot of disease pressure, but, you know, we were trying to look at some of those claims of, will a fungicide, you know, improve water use efficiency in the plant, or will it help with standability at the end of the season? And, you know, a long story short, what we found was that where we sprayed fungicides, it was no different than where we didn't spray fungicides for any of those things. And even with the standability, and I think, you know, that was sort of a surprise, because we think about when we're spraying fungicides on already pretty healthy corn, sometimes, you know, it can make it greener longer and it might be a little bit better at the end of the season for standability. But when you are spraying it on already stressed corn that already is sort of under some stress and isn't at its, you know, top health, you know, we can't bring that health back.
Well, and you know, in those crops, when it gets to that reproductive stage, it's really needing a lot of water and it's a lot of energy, and it's going to pull from everything it can.
It's about a quarter to 3/10 a day, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
And so it's pulling a lot of that it can out of the stalk.
Right. Yep.
That's causing those standability issues. And
That's when we start to see it firing up from the bottom and starting to pulling some from the reserves.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep. I think that leads us right into our timely tip, Jay.
Absolutely. You know, and it's no surprise that our timely tip this week is going to be related to scouting your fields. We've talked about it a lot on this show, but when we're talking about the potential of disease pressure, coupled with the fact of, you know, trying to figure out what your yield potential may be in some of these areas that have a lot of heat and dry weather stress, it's just a good time to remind people to scout your fields and know what your yield potential is when you're evaluating any type of fungicide application need. Some of this corn, hopefully with the rain, it will pay to have that application. Some of it will not. It's just the way it's going to be. I think, as I said a minute ago, some of it's where it already is going to be. Yeah. The rain's not necessarily going to turn it around. So we just, folks need to be out, be in fields, be looking. Like I said, it's not going to be for too long where they can start peeling those ears back and trying to get a gauge of what the yield potential of an individual field may be. And the real importance of scouting is pulling the trigger on a fungicide application is just like any other application. There needs to be that economic threshold that is, it needs to be met by that application. And this is really going to be on a field by field basis for everybody across our part of the state and anywhere this year that's experiencing this type of dryness.
Yeah, just another good, you know, you want to try to get a hold of your crop insurance agent too to kind of, if you're experiencing the same conditions that we have here, you know, you need to try to get a hold of them and kind of get all of that information for them.
Sure, not to be playing the crop insurance game, but you need to know what your trigger point is for that to kick in versus where you're at in the field right now. It may help you decide as to whether or not you want to put any more money in that crop.
Yep. That's right.
Yep.
So, good questions.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
Well, does anybody have anything else they want to throw in? If not, we'll get ready to start winding this up. We appreciate you coming on, Kirsten. It's been a great time to sit down and talk about some of these things, and hopefully we want to do this again in the future. And
if there's something to talk about.
Yeah, hopefully, that's why I paused, because I'm hoping there's something to talk about. Maybe sometime get together later this fall after all the combines are back in the shed and talk about what this year was really like and evaluate some of these programs and talk about some of how your work you're doing now, how it may have ended up at the end of the year. So we appreciate you being on here, and we thank our hosts for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.